You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's draft season. The 2024 NFL Draft is right around the corner, and the Move the Six podcast has you covered for all your draft needs. The show's hosted by me, Daniel Jeremiah, and my partner, Bucky Brooks.
When it comes to Detroit and the draft, Move the Sticks is the podcast that will answer all of your questions. Who should you put in your mock draft? Don't worry, tune in and you'll be ready to watch the draft like a scout.
We've been studying these prospects all season, so you won't get a better opinion. Subscribe now and listen to the Move the Sticks podcast on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go.
Pac-12 fans, this one's for you.
Put your hands up, man!
This is the Pac-12 Apostles.
Keeping it real.
And only the truth lives here.
Pac-12 Apostles. Apostles.
George Reister, he's Ralph Amston, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. We are back. You guys, thank you guys for joining us. Got a lot to talk about today. You know, sometimes there's not a whole lot of news, so we take a break in the offseason, let things cool down, but here we are. So Jimmy Lake, there's news about Jimmy Lake. I don't know what that news is, but Ralph is going to tell me. The Pac-12 has decided to work from home because they don't want to spend $11 million on offices that they don't need to be in, that they could have bought the damn building for anyway. But anyways, Lincoln Riley gives his thoughts on recruiting. Oregon's 2022 class keeps getting better, even though signing day has been done for, you know, a couple months. Salt Lake City, Tucson, and Westwood. My thoughts on those, because I have a son who's being recruited right now. So there are thoughts. Oh, I just thought about it, Ralph. So as he continues to play well, if he plays well this season, this might actually, our podcast already does really well, but I wonder if that will affect the numbers if I bring my son on to talk about recruiting.
What a weird dynamic. What a weird situation to be in. I mean, it was always sort of evident, right, that that's the direction that it was going in. He's a talented athlete, a talented quarterback. Even 3 years ago when we were, you know, started doing this thing, it's not completely unreasonable or unheard of for the idea that, like, Damon would be getting recruited by Pac-12 schools. But like, here we are in it with you going on visits to all these cities, and it just feels different. Like it just feels very different than any other podcast or show out there, because it there's this element to it where, like, we're pretty critical of some coaches and programs sometimes. And now some of those coaches and programs are trying to recruit your
son.
Dude,
I thought about this. Dude, I thought about this. And it was funny because you said, when we were talking about topics, you said, oh, wait, actually, first, you guys, we're also going to talk about JT Daniels to West Virginia and the ASU quarterback situation as well. But when Ralph brought this up about topics, he was like, yeah, and you can talk about how the visits were to Salt Lake, Tucson, and Westwood. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh my God, that's actually probably valuable content. And it's funny because when I was on the trips, you get some inside information when you're there. And I was like, okay, so I have to create some filters, right?
Right.
There's some stuff that I can't say on the podcast, right?
Yeah.
Because the relationships are important. But then I'm like, I have to make a good podcast because this is money. But then I'm also like, bro, if it made me think about, okay, George, what are you going to say and what are you not going to say? And how am I going to frame things? Because I was like, I'm still going to continue to tell the truth and tell things how I see them.
Right.
And I was like, the chips are just going to have to fall wherever they may. Because like, I have a job to do, but like,
man,
I wholeheartedly
disagree with that strategy.
You wholeheartedly disagree with it?
Yeah, I think until the moment that your son's verbal drops, we need to be talking about 12 different teams, all with the opportunity to win a national championship.
but the truth is, I don't think that there is any delusion about the state of the programs, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about the first trip that we went on. Like, what, 2 weeks ago now, week and a half? I forget. It was a blur. We went to Tucson. We flew into Tucson early in the morning, 9:30 in the morning, went over to the stadium. And it's an interesting recruiting dynamic because some of these coaches on these staffs, I've known for like Scotty Graham on Arizona staff. I've known Scotty Graham since like 2003 when he was working at the NFLPA. Like, I've had Scotty Graham's personal cell phone number. We've been talking for years before he even got into coaching. So I know some of these people up close and personal, right? So yeah, my dynamic with them is going to be a little bit different probably than other people's dynamic because I care about him as a person. He cares about me as a person. I want him to be successful. And now when it comes to my son, I can now hold you accountable for things that you say or don't say because we have a personal relationship.
Right.
So, and Andy Ludwig, Utah's offensive coordinator, he just so happened to be my offensive coordinator when I was at Oregon. So like, these are things. So when he came to come see my son throw, I can speak to him and talk to him where other parents can't, because I have, you know, I've known this dude since literally I was in high school. And you have a pre-existing relationship. So we went to Tucson. And remember when Jed Fish first got the job, we were like, yo, like, maybe it should have gone to this guy, this guy, this guy.
Now, I outright laughed.
Yeah. And when you go, so they've opened up a new football facility that's attached to the stadium. It is, they're still putting some of the, you know, like, the paint's not fully dry on it. Like, they're still doing some upgrades to it and all of that. But it's definitely an upgrade over what they had. Now, the facilities at Arizona are not going to blow you away like they will at other places, but they have all the requisite things that you need. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's a deficient place, but it also is not going to look like Oregon stuff where we've been as well.
Okay. So can I ask you a question that is kind of unique to your situation? I've always gotten the impression from our conversations over the years that Arizona was your fallback.
UCLA, like it was UCLA first.
UCLA, okay. But there was a minute when you strongly considered committing to Wildcats.
Because I loved Coach Dick Tomey. I wanted to play for him, but I thought that he was going to get fired prior to me finishing school, which ultimately did happen, I believe. But, you know, so that was why, you know, I kind of ruled them out, but I liked it.
So what about your experience there as a recruit versus your experience there as a dad of a recruit? Like, were some of the same things there that kind of appealed to you, or was it solely the coach, had nothing to do with the city school or anything like that?
For me, it wasn't so much city school and all of that. Like, I was fine with the city. like didn't have any, you know, like neither here nor there. I kind of fell in love on my recruiting trip.
Are we talking with another human being or with the
yes.
campus?
No. With another human being. With a young lady who was on campus already.
Arizona women, man.
Yeah.
Don't sleep on the 48th state and the females that come from there.
Yeah. So we went there and, you know, their whole tagline, it's personal, right?
Yeah.
I got it. Like, okay. So the first step to getting it for me was last year and where we talked about it, Arizona had all those kids jumping the portal. And then Jed Fish talked them all out of the portal. And then the energy surrounding the team, like it feels like everybody wants to be there. And you've never had, I promise you, you have never in life had this much excitement around a team that won one game last year against a shorthanded Cal team. Like right. You have never felt this much excitement. There is no misconception about the roster. They're like, we need to get the roster better, period, right? They know that this is not a Pac-12 contending roster yet or a national championship roster. But they're like, their whole sell is you can come in, play early, build, and be a part of something that is going to prepare you for your next stage in life. And if that is the NFL, we have coaches that know how to do it, connections, all of these things. So, and me and my son left Arizona feeling like these were very genuine people, like that they are knowledgeable. We sat in meetings. So there was no misconception about, you know, about roster or anything like that. We got a chance to tour the campus, had lunch. You know, my son sat and talked with Jimmy Doherty and he got a chance for, you know, 30, 45 minutes, got a chance to talk with Coach Fish as well. It was really, really good. It was a very, very good trip. And yeah, he was excited.
I almost wish Jimmy Doherty still had me blocked on Twitter so that you could have been the one to so that you could have been the one to be like, hey, my co-host, he would like to see your tweets.
But yeah,
he unblocked me a long time ago. So did they bring up at all like the education stuff that they do, like the bringing in all the different speakers and
a little bit? They touched on it, but
they're not using that as like the hard sell for recruiting. It's still more about like what's going on the field.
Yes, that. But also when you take unofficials, they don't roll out every single thing for you because they want you to come back. They want to give you enough to wet your whistle and for you to enjoy it, enough for you to come back for camp or enough for you to come back for whatever else. So.
All right. So apart from your son, honest impression, are they on the right track?
Yes.
Roster wise, some of the stuff that you saw, you feel like you see improvement.
Yes. Yeah. This will not be so, like, I still consider last year's team like a zero win team in my mind.
Me too.
Because the Cal win, like Cal had like half their team.
Yeah.
So like, but this is not a zero win team for this upcoming year. This is not. I think we're looking at probably 4 wins.
And you think it's pretty much that head and shoulders above everybody else, Jaden DeLora is his experience and everything.
It's not close. And Noah Fifita might be the backup.
Wow.
So yeah. And then a couple days later, we leave and go to Utah. Now, people are like, black dude going out to Salt Lake City? Whoa. Dude that's like my little brother, Pharaoh Brown, tight end for the Texans. He lives in Salt Lake City. So that's already like a bonus because he takes care of, you know, like if Damon needed anything, I could count on him to take care of it. You know what I mean? Like, granted, he's in season part of the year, but when he's not in season, he's in Salt Lake City.
So, I love Salt Lake.
Yeah.
I know people see me busting on the Utah Jazz on Twitter all the time. That has nothing to do with Salt Lake City or the state of Utah. I love it. I tried to move there once.
Oh, rewind to Arizona for just a quick second.
Okay.
When I stepped out on the field in Arizona, so since I retired, so since my last professional football in 2010, that was only the second time that was like, oh my God, I kind of missed this. Like, I stepped on Arizona's field because that was the first place I ever caught a touchdown while I was in college, was at Arizona. And it made me, like, I got this rush throughout my whole body. It was like, it was the weirdest thing. Like, I was like, oh my God, I could smell the grass. I could hear the fans. Like, I've been to a lot of football games since I finished. And that was one of the first times that I was like, oh my God, like, I wish I could do this again.
So was that something that's just personally going on in your life? Or was it something about the energy of the place?
I think that the place was important because it was the first touchdown that I ever scored. Uh-huh. I had a hurdle there that was on the cover of a magazine. Like, it was just like, it was a good game. The energy was good. Yeah. So I have fond memories of it. So now going to Utah wasn't in the Pac-12. So I had played at Utah State while I was at Oregon, but I had never played at Utah. And I had never even been to Rice-Eccles. Rice-Eccles has got an amazing view. Oof. Yep. They've redone it, dude. Like they have a thing, like, you know how the Cowboys walk through the fans? Mm-hmm. Like, on the way to the stadium, they have that going on. They're still redoing the underbelly of it. They've redone their locker room at the stadium. Listen, Utah is – and when you meet the people there, because of – I think a lot of it has to do with the Polynesian community as well. Like, mm-hmm. There's so much family element. There is, you know, like, it feels chill, but also they have their core principles up on the wall. And you can tell that they live them at all times. Like, that Coach Whittingham embodies them, that all of that. And we know from listening to this podcast what I think about Coach Whittingham.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there were all those rumors last year that he might be done.
No, he's not. He's not done. I'll tell you that right now. he's not done. And it doesn't appear to be happening anytime soon.
So what was yours and Damon's impression? Cause the only thing that I saw from that was your boy Pharaoh tweeted, or he posted on Instagram, a video of you out on the sideline. And you had your red LA Dodgers cap on, red and black. So it was like you were already in team gear, but representing your chosen home. What was your impression of what they have going on out there?
So they do something very unique at practice because their roster is so big. They're at like 126, 127 kids right now. So they have to actually get their roster down from their walk-ons a little bit. And so they do a split practice. So the ones and the upper guys on the depth chart, they practice first. And then some players practice with both squads. So they do split squad practice that way everybody can get reps and people aren't just standing around not doing stuff and all of that. So practice is really only about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. And then, but they do it twice, so it's long.
And you stayed for both sessions?
Yeah, yeah. And then we met with Coach Ludwig after, watched some film, talked all of that. And it was very interesting because the way they recruit is different. Because they're like, you know, they'll tell you straight up, like, we like you. Here's what they told my son. They're like, if this had been any other school, well, pretty much any other school, they would have been like, listen, we're offering you right now, right? Because he started on JV. He has, you know, he's done the whole 7-on-7 camp circuit and showed out, right?
Yeah.
And so they're like, this is a kid. I mean, he's thrown in front of coaches, done all this stuff. And so they're like, this is a kid who we want. You know what I mean? But they're like, said straight up, like, look, we can be like some of these other places and throw you and throw you some offers. But you know, and everybody else knows that if we say we're offering you, it is committable on the spot. And he was like,
you said that a lot of their offers all go through the head man, right?
Yes.
Like there's a lot of control there over what the roster looks like from Whittingham's.
Correct. Correct. Like, even there have been times where four-star kids have committed to them and then not signed and quote unquote flipped somewhere else. But it was by choice, not by, you know what I mean? Like, it was by like, you can find somewhere else if you want to.
Right. They have I always thought they have an interesting way of getting kids out of California and Texas and finding a way for them to blend on the roster that not every team is that good. Sometimes it has to be one or the other.
But they're dominant. Looking for the right things. Like, they're looking for people of high character, work hard, all of that stuff. And but they understand the need to, because they're in a situation, their wide receiver room is the weakest part of their offense.
I agree.
Their tight ends are the strength. And people negatively recruit against them saying, look, this is not that they won't throw to the wide receivers and all of this. And they're like, we're just going to throw to the best players. We have three NFL tight ends.
Right.
We're going to throw to them, and create matchup mismatches with three tight ends on the field. So you don't know whether we're going to line in tight and run the football or line in tight and throw it or spread them out. And now you got a personnel issue on defense.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Poppy.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you go into your experience at Salt Lake more open-minded because they whooped Oregon's ass twice last year, or with a little bit of like some bruising, some ego bruising?
See, I didn't mean, come with that.
No, it's a good question.
I'm joking.
it's also funny, but it is a good question. I want to know, like, you walk into that situation, be like, all right, you earned my respect last year. I'm here to see what you have to say, and if this could be the best place for my son to continue.
Okay, I didn't even consider that. Okay. But you're probably right. You're probably right. Where I'm like, and you see where, dude, Utah. There are two teams in the NFL that look like, I'm sorry, in the Pac-12 that look like SEC teams up front. That is Oregon and that is Utah.
Right.
Like they look different coming off the bus.
Yeah.
And so when you see that and you understand how many Utah players have had success in the NFL, you're like, oh, wow, this could really be something. Like, their recruiting is going in the right direction. So now you're like, ooh, imagine if Kyle Whittingham had, you know, access to, you know, five-star guys every year, you know, a bunch of them, and high four-star guys, and had the pick, be able to pick from that, I believe you'd be looking at like a Nick Saban type of situation.
That's interesting. That's interesting because I often wonder if there are just coaches out there that collecting talent doesn't necessarily work for in that way. Like I wonder to myself if Herm Edwards would be better off doing the R kind of guy recruiting. And then I always think back to the Jim Mora era of the better they got at recruiting, the worse they got on the field.
Oh God. Yes. At UCLA. Yep.
Yeah. Even though they did, you know, string together, especially with Neuheisel's roster. I thought he did some really impressive things. But then, no, you just sort of like, no, always go back to like, no, talent is destiny. Like, that's you want to get the best players and you want to figure it out from there. And so sometimes I argue with myself on whether or not like Whittingham would be that guy if it was just like a thing that recruits said to themselves, like, man, you want to ball out, you go to Salt Lake, which is hard for me to even say without laughing because that mindset just doesn't exist. They really have to earn your commitment and get. And that's why I think they have so much success is when a recruit wraps their head around the idea of being in Utah for 3 to 4 years, they go all in on the idea.
Oh, if they get a top tier quarterback committed, like a guy, you know, like a kid that has some hype around them, all of that stuff, that's going to change their total recruiting. Total. But obviously they're doing a good job now. Needless to say, I liked it a lot.
Well, let's talk about the school that you're technically a booster of then. Because this is the most fascinating one to me.
What?
That you are a UCLA season ticket holder.
I guess that does make me a booster then, huh?
In the weird technical way that nobody actually believes, yes. But that's the definition, right?
Yeah.
You contribute financially to the football program. And why? I don't know if people know why. Why you go to UCLA games and not like USC. Or flying up to Oregon every weekend. Like why do you go to UCLA games?
My wife went to UCLA.
There it is. Yeah.
And I almost went to UCLA. Like I went to all their games when I was in high school. Like I was at the games almost every weekend that I wasn't on a recruiting visit. So we have already my son had already been on campus a bunch. Like it's not because my wife had spoken at she was a commencement speaker. We've been on campus a lot. Like we've been to Pauley Pavilion a lot. So it's not like there was anything you could tell him about the campus really. Right.
Right.
But he got a chance to go into the new facility. He was like, oh my God, this looks, I told him, I was like, tell me if this looks like a place you've been before. He was like, Dad, this looks just like Oregon's facility. I was like, bingo. they took Oregon's facility, shrunk it down like 70% because of space. And then sat it down and it is dope. It is dope. And Chip Kelly is, if you've never been around him, super smart guy. You understand the way they use technology to help advance. They actually bragged about the food thing, how much they spend on food, the quality of food that you're going to eat there, how they're going to take care of your bodies and the catapult stuff. Like they do, like they sell you on that part of it. And Chip did a good job. Like, and he hit me when I didn't know Chip's faith was that important to him.
Okay.
And that resonates with our family. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and my son is kind of a, he's a Southern California kid. Like, you know, you met him, you know, he's, so like, it feels like he kind of fits there, if that makes sense. If it makes sense football wise, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we know the school is fantastic. You know, so Westwood was great. We're actually going back out to practice on Saturday.
How this is a question that that I think our listeners would be interested in, because it's not a question that you would get. But you and I talk about anything, you know. How is it going into some of these visits saying like, all right, but would they really play a black quarterback? Because you went out to Utah where they do. And have UCLA long history of it. I mean, from Jackie Robinson on, you know, Brett Hundley in the last 4 years of Dorian Thompson Robinson. And then, you know, you go to Arizona where, you know, Jordan McLeod started out third string last year, but got to play. Khalil Tate was, you know, starting there for a couple of years.
It's funny because that has not crossed my mind at all. The only place that that's crossed my mind for, to be perfectly honest, is actually coming to come see Damon throw next week, I think. And at Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
So they're coming to come see him practice and throw and all of that. And that's the only place that I've thought about that at. And that's only because I haven't seen one.
Right.
But like, I know that
USC
David
is about
Shaw's,
to go down that road for the first time, right?
Oh, yes. But that's not even on the radar right now.
Right.
But Stanford, like David Shaw is a black man. He's clearly aware of issues out in the world. So I thought about that with Stanford. Like, I've never seen a black quarterback there. But then Ari Patu is probably going to be their starter this year, who is Saul Patu's son, who I played with at Oregon. So, like, then that's kind of dispelled, too. So I haven't really, like, you know what I mean? Like, that hasn't crossed my mind at all.
That's a good thing. I mean, because I definitely talked to recruit parents that said that factored into the decision that they were making on which Pac-12 school to send their kid to play football at. And I'm talking quarterback parents, you know?
Yeah. So, and I mean, if you look, so like it hadn't really, because I've seen it pretty much everywhere. Like I don't remember it at Washington or Washington State, but Washington State is in the middle of nowhere. So it's probably hard to get black kids to go there too. You know what I mean? On some level,
but they will this year, right?
Yeah.
The quarterback they brought in from Sacred Heart or whatever.
Yes. Correct. So like, it was never like a negative with any of the schools. Like it's never been a negative thought around me surrounding any of those around that at all, because pretty much all of them have had black quarterbacks recently.
Is there any schools that like, no, I can't make you say this out loud on the podcast, but I'm going to ask it anyway, just so that you know where my head's at.
Okay.
So, there is kind of like it'd be fun to do, you know, like a catch them all element to it of like, this is the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. And we did unofficials to all 12 campuses to get the inside scoop of what's going on. Right. But I have wondered if that did cross your mind of like, I don't think my kid would play for that school, but it would be fun to go on a visit just to be able to talk about it on the podcast.
Yes, I will say yes. There are some schools out in the nation that's probably true. All right. Now on to the next thing. What's going on with Jimmy Lake?
Okay, yeah. So there was I don't know what to call it. Almost like an exit interview thing. It wasn't with Jimmy Lake. But it was in The Athletic, and we haven't done a show in a while, so this is from late March. And Christian Cable wrote this. It said, internal documents and text messages provide a look into the final days of the Jimmy Lake era at Washington. And, you know, you'd figure, you know, they got all of this information through, you know, freedom of information requests or whatever. You figure that there would be some maybe scandalous thing, especially with you know, him essentially being dismissed for the Ruparaki Fava'i incident. And what they found is it just was pretty simple. It was stuff that you actually talked about going on behind the scenes at this podcast. You were tapped into exactly what was going on. And it said Jen Cohen just said that she came to the conclusion that she didn't have confidence in Coach Lake's ability to continue to lead the program moving forward.
Yep.
Now, this story, it got quotes from people, but they're nothing in this story is disrespectful or shocking or anything. It really just comes down to this was a will versus skill issue. He wanted to do a good job, and they just don't think he had the ability to get the job done. So The Athletic comes out with this piece, and there's just really nothing of note in there. I'm just wondering if that surprised you. If you expected it to kind of be worse when you consider that what they pointed out him being fired for was fairly.
No, I didn't expect it to be worse. We knew what it was. He wasn't recruiting well and he was losing and they found an out. That's what it was.
And that was the whole thing with elevating him, right? Was he did such a good job.
Yeah. Defensive coordinator.
And as a recruit. Yep. A recruiter, that if the recruiting wasn't there, and that was the main reason you did it, you probably could have stood to have him have a learning curve on how to become the type of leader that team needed. But if it didn't come with the recruiting, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to hang on like USC did for several years to Clay Helton, or are you going to make a change? And they made a pretty quick change. What I'm kind of surprised at is that you and I floated a bunch of different possible destinations for him, and it doesn't sound like any of those are coming to fruition. So do you think that he's kind of scarred by the experience at University of Washington into possibly not being someone that people would be wanting to bring in as a coach?
No, I think that there are people who want to bring him in as a coach. I think he's going to be very strategic about where he wants to be next. So I think we will see him resurface as a defensive coordinator next season. 100% confident about that.
Yeah. So there's a safety named Alex Cook there who's heading into his sixth year. And he had an interesting quote to the Seattle Times when they asked if University of Washington's secondary, which has been, I mean, over the last 10 years, far and away the best in the Pac-12. I think that's fair to say, on average, especially with producing NFL-level talent. He said that the standard wasn't created by the coaches. It's created by the players. That's something they take to heart, and they expect that to continue. That the Washington Huskies, if nothing else, are going to continue to have a dominant secondary. Do you believe that?
No. I think that they had some special talents in that room who have been the best parts of that team. And it was clear coming in every year. And I think that they may be okay. They may still have some talent in that room, but I don't think it's going to be the anchor of the defense like it had been in previous years.
Okay. Well, when Dom Hampton and Jacoby Covington are both all conference, we'll revisit your comments.
Okay. And when, and Washington has reached out about my son.
Yeah. Didn't they come to see him throw?
Yeah.
As well?
Yep. So, but that was, Yeah. So it'll be interesting, though, to see how that works out, because I think sometimes teams may be hesitant to recruit, but I tell everybody, like, yo, like, I'm sending him to the best place for him, not the best place for me. The Pac-12 Network's George Kliakoff, he's like, listen, we're done with the lease in San Francisco. We are not that everybody who's what, not a network employee, will be working from home, and that they haven't chosen a new place for the conference headquarters. People thought it would be either in Arizona, but more likely in Vegas. I thought that this was a great move, because the building that the Pac-12 was leasing, they signed their lease at what, like $900,000 a month or something ridiculous. And then right after they signed it, the building was sold for like 90 some odd million dollars. And with the amount of rent that they paid during the time period, they could have bought the building. Could have bought the building. So then at least the Pac-12 would have had $100+ million asset, because it would have appreciated so much. That was a crime. And George Kliakoff is just like, listen, we have to work on a shoestring budget, but you can still do your job, but we don't need to, you know, like, we will rent a WeWork space or something if we need to, you know, host people, or we'll just pay for dinner or lunch.
Man, so the stories about them paying too much for rent are almost 4 years old now. It's amazing that it wasn't, you know, something that people were talking about in mass even before then, because it was just so disastrous. I think that this is the logical thing to do, and it's hard for me to let's put it this way. Every single time George Kliavkov does like a normal thing, I feel like I celebrate, because of the years of gaslighting from Larry Scott of not doing the most obvious and normal thing. And
yes.
And I'm wondering when that's going to stop, and when I'm going to start being able to like hold George Kliavkov just accountable as the commissioner of the Pac-12 conference.
Oh, instead of the guy that's coming in to clean it up and trying to patch holes. And then you're like, we can't blame it. We can't fault him for anything that's happening.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the thing that you run into every time there's a new president and you're like 18 months into their term and they're still talking about like, well, I got left this huge mess. I was like, well, then dude, then clean it up.
Yeah.
That's your job.
And at what point in time does that change is the question.
Yeah. Because there are so many obvious things that needed adjusted, and he's just sort of come in and done all those obvious things. And what I'm finding in myself as somebody who really cares about the conference is every time George Kliavkov does a thing that we were screaming for him to do for years, I get mad all over again.
Yes. Hell yeah.
Like where I get mad.
Where you're like, why didn't you do this in the first place? Crazy man.
Yeah. Because it's like, when you spent all this time telling me that it couldn't be done, or that, you know, that that's not actually what people want, or that things are fine. And then somebody comes in and it's just as simple as like waving a magic wand, and it just gets you upset all over again. And it always frustrated me that not only were they in San Francisco paying exorbitant amounts of rent, but in order to have employees, they had to bring them out there and put them in the most expensive city to live in. So you had Pac-12 Network employees like paying crazy amounts of money just to be able to live, traveling crazy amounts of time just to get to work. And then a lot of those people got furloughed or laid off. And then they're stuck in a city they're not from, you know, with leases they can't break and all sorts of stuff going on. And it was just an absolute mess. And so, you know, the fact that this finally got done means that maybe the Pac-12 will actually be able to attract talent, like good talent that can do remote work for them. But I am interested to see what it means for the network, because it's important to me that they still broadcast games, But what, if anything, are we using this network for outside of those broadcasts and little bit of analysis? Should they be trying to build up the network in some other way?
Oh, see, I think that George Kliakoff's first real, you know, what did he do situation is going to be what he does with these TV contracts. And if he's able to fix anything in the meantime, if he's able to, because these contracts are ironclad, like, remember, got a chance to talk to him. He was like, listen, that's the first thing I did. And I was like, oh my God, these things are terrible. So listen, I expect him to, like, I don't think that there's anything that he can do, but I'm hoping that there is something that he can do, if that makes sense.
I would love for them to start producing content that highlights the personalities of the Pac-12 in a way that is super accessible and financially rewarding for the people that are involved. Like, if the Pac-12 network can have like a real assistant coaches of the Pac-12, if Utah's secondary coach can be on Real Housewives, he can be on Real Pac-12 Assistants, right?
Yes.
To where we just get to know some of these people better, or even some of the players. Cause I'm assuming, like, if let's say the Pac-12 was doing a show where they followed 6 or 7 players for an entire year, they should be able to compensate those players, right?
Yes.
Under what NIL is.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out ways for them to be able to take some of that $9.2 million or whatever they were paying in rent every year to reallocate it into something that actually builds up the personality of the Pac-12 and encourages recruits to stick around in that region of the country.
Yep, absolutely.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe.
From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the crazy surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get 3 wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Now, Lincoln Riley, he had his thoughts on recruiting. Do you have those pulled up?
I'm pulling them up right now.
And this was very interesting because the comments came out after actually. So while you're pulling that up, we'll talk briefly about Oregon's 2022 recruiting class.
Okay.
So they just added two new players to their 2022 recruiting class, which bumped them up with only 17 recruits to number 13 in the nation. Their blue chip rating is continuing to go up. They got a five-star, one of the top 10 players in the country, in Connerly.
Who 24/7 had forecasted to USC right before he committed.
Yes, and that, because USC, they thought they had this one in the bag. They're like, we're recruiting. We got Lincoln Riley came. We got four five-stars like that between two classes. They're like, we're getting everybody. And then it's like, wait, hold on. He didn't choose us? Oh, my God. They must be paying people. And you're like, everybody's like, wait, what, USC fans? How dare you? How dare you? How do you think you got your quarterback, fool? How do you think you just got your new quarterback from Oklahoma, where he had massive success last year? How do you think you got him? How do you think you got your coach?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so Connerly ends up picking Oregon. And then there's the, oh, my God, the belly aching. Oh, my God, this, the name, image, and likeness thing. This is, he got a big bag. We don't know what the kid got. But
even then, wouldn't that be actually encouraging for you?
Because if you're USC?
Yeah, one,
yes.
Once you realize that that's going to be the primary motivating factor, if it was, in fact, the primary motivating factor for Josh Connerly or his family, once you realize that's the case, you actually have the resources to make that happen and are in the process of making that happen with those resources. All that would serve to me is encouragement and igniting a competitive spirit to say, like, all right, Oregon, like, we see how it is. You know, we'll keep going head to head on some of these. And I think that's, you know, I just, you shouldn't be in a position to complain right now if you're a have. And the Pac-12 only really has a couple of haves, right? Everybody else is kind of a have not in this new environment. And USC is on that list of very financially blessed and reputationally sound places that high level recruits would want to go. So I don't see what the point is of complaining. But the other interesting thing that happened for Oregon's 2022 class is Kyler Casper, a 6'5", over 200-pound wide receiver, could ultimately end up at tight end, player out of Arizona, not only committed to Oregon, which is kind of a surprise because his dad played for Iowa and Tennessee was hot in pursuit, but not only did he commit to Oregon, he reclassified to the 2022 class.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, that first Dan Lanning, Kenny Dillingham,
it looks pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a 5-star, 8 4-stars. So you signed a small class. So you still have a bunch of scholarships for 2023 too. At first it was like, oh, okay, will they pick up where Cristobal left off? And now you're like, oh my God, what the hell can they do with a whole year? And right. If you look at the visitors list, like, Oregon always got good visitors.
Yeah.
But when you look at their visitor list now, it's even better. It's even better. Like, they're getting number, like, top kids in the country to come visit. And if you get them on campus, like, on unofficials too, and then they're coming back for officials, you're going to land some of them fish, buddy. But now what, and now the reason why we're talking about the 2022 Oregon class is because of Lincoln Riley's comments, and you can read them, Ralph.
Yeah. So Lincoln Riley, talked a little bit about NIL and how it's altered recruiting. And of course, if he's speaking on this, people are definitely going to listen, especially, you know, Oklahoma fans who are always looking for a reason to be upset, LA, based college football fans who just want to know, you know, how the environment is shifting. And then anybody else in the Pac-12 that has to go head to head with USC. Here's what Lincoln Riley had to say. It's completely changed it. It doesn't even resemble what we used to do before NIL. In every sense of the word, it's different. The reality is it's made what's gone on at certain places for a long time. It's going to put it out in the open, so maybe some positives there. I'm a fan of guys being able to capitalize off of their name, image, and likeness. There was no doubt it was going to seep into recruiting at some point. I think anybody that cares about college football is not real pleased with that because that wasn't the intention. We all get that. A lot of people voiced concerns when NIL came up that there had to be a plan for that. Instead, we instituted NIL without any plan for that. So that's where we're at, or that's why we're at where we're at. And I'm sure at some point there's going to be a market correction, if you will, with recruiting. Hopefully there will be, because in a perfect world, they stay separate. High school kid, his family, their state, if they have an NIL opportunity, that's great. College kids, if they have an NIL opportunity, fantastic. It shouldn't cross over. But unfortunately, with the way the rules are set up, it has crossed over. It's crossing over a lot right now, and it's totally changing recruiting. I'm going to be honest, George, I don't know what he's saying here.
I heard that, and all I heard was, womp, 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 womp. Bruh, you are one of the haves. You are one of the beneficiaries of this.
Do you think he's whining, or do you think he's acknowledging that fans had a concern that didn't get addressed, and now it's playing out exactly the way that some fans who should be less prepared to deal with this than the NCAA had said that it would end up?
Yes, dude, the NCAA, and that's why I remember when his comments came out, I tweeted, I was like, people are mad at the kids for this. This is Mark Emmert's fault.
Oh, for sure.
This is the NCAA's fault. They let the kids in the candy store and was like, "Yo, here's the credit card. Meet me back at the car," and left all of them in there at the same time, and they all gave them black card Amexes
after spending an exorbitant amount of money to keep them out of the candy store.
Yes. Spent $100 million to keep them out of the candy store instead of spending said energy and time figuring out ways to, you know, put guardrails around these things. But listen, like people are like, oh, the Senate needs to, Congress needs to intervene and do what? Like, yes, they need to put some universal rules in, but how many rules are they actually going to be able to put in? Yeah. They're not going to be able to put very many in. The toothpaste is already out of the jar. If you try to put it back in, there's going to be endless lawsuits. It's going to be a nightmare. The NCAA is to blame. And this is the system that we have now. And now you got to deal with it.
But what the hell does this mean? Hopefully they stay separate. That's what Lincoln Riley said. So what does he mean that hopefully NIL doesn't play into recruiting?
Because he's at USC. So he's hoping that the kids that would ordinarily go to USC that might end up now at Missouri or, you know, or Arizona or UCLA or Washington or Oregon or wherever else, or Florida or Alabama, that kids that he would have a chance at. He's like, no. I want to be able to have the biggest stick in the yard. I'm in LA. I'm at USC. I can bring celebrities around. Like, oh, so he has a natural advantage, and he doesn't like the fact that it is going to level the playing field or expand the playing field.
Is it okay? But here's my question: what is the grievance? Is it collectives? Because he's saying if a high school kid has an NIL opportunity in high school, like if somebody wants to, you know, if a car dealership wants to work with the quarterback of modern day, great. And if another car dealership wants to work with the quarterback of USC, great. But it shouldn't factor into recruiting. All I can think of is, does he have an issue with NIL collectives that are putting together what are essentially like contracted pay rates from the outside, like for Nico Iamaleva, who's leaving California to go to University of Tennessee? Is that the type of stuff that he's frustrated with? Is it just the collectives? He wants the NCAA to come in and make that illegal, or or what? Because I still think you should probably have to do something for the money.
Yeah, but they do. They have to do charity work or something. I mean, it's one of those loose things. Like, so they're actually doing something. It's just a matter of whether people feel like that's commensurate or not.
Nico Iamaleva is going to do what at University of Tennessee? He's going to represent every business that's part of the collective?
No.
He's going to be at their beck and call?
He will probably have to do like, you know, some of like show up at the children's hospital, show up on a podcast. Like, it's not going to be very much that has to be done.
But that feels gross, though. Like a little bit. It's always like warm and fuzzy thing when you have team activities that go to help like the less fortunate or people who are going through it.
I mean, he probably would have done it anyway.
I'm getting paid $180,000 to read to kids. $180,000 an hour.
I'm going to read with passion. I'm going to read with passion.
I'd be pissed. I'd be pissed if Nico Iamaleva walked into a kindergarten class and just like monotoned his way through Cat in the Hat.
Hey, read this correct, funny man. All right. JT Daniels decided to before we get off of Lincoln Riley. So USC fans believe that they are a potential, you know, playoff team this year. I wholeheartedly disagree. I think that they are further that if they were playing a game of 7-on-7, they are in the catbird seat. But when it comes to actual football, they don't have the linemen on either side to be able to compete. Utah and Oregon are going to be able to run them over. Where do you think that their recruiting goes in terms of up front?
Well, you don't got to argue with me. You got to argue with Colin Cowherd, who has decided to be USC's hype man.
The most perfect practice that's ever been seen.
Oh, my God. I love it. He had another tweet yesterday that was like, oh, I guess this is just going to be like, I was like, buddy, your daughter went to ASU. Throw us a bone over here. Like, she got her degree. And you're out here caping for University of Southern California. I get it, though. I like a lot of what they have. And I think offensively, your offensive line talent only matters insofar as is it going against high-level defensive line talent. And the truth of the matter is there's probably only 3-4 Pac-12 teams that have defensive lines that are more talented than USC's supposedly untalented offensive line. The truth is their offensive line is just mediocre. So as long as they have a mobile quarterback in Caleb Williams and a bunch of receivers who are able to do stuff after the catch, and considering they're going to bring the running back game into it in some way, I think that'll make up for a lot of what they're going through. I think the real issue for USC is going to be on defense, which I think is something that that was brought up by our friends Rob Bowron and Bryant Conger, you know, on their show that you know, USC might be fine offensively, but like it would be totally reasonable to expect them to give up over 30 points a game this year.
Yeah.
I'm not as bummed out about their offensive line prospects as a lot of other people, namely you. I think that they'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
but Lincoln Riley, you're not going to compete for a championship with an okay offensive line.
Correct. Oh, and Lincoln Riley also was just pinned a – he just pinned a thing for – what the heck did he do? For the Players Tribune about why he left.
Oh, I'm sure that will – oh, man. I would certainly do it differently if I could do it again. They're not going to want to hear that. They just want to hate him.
Yeah.
What did he do wrong? I don't think he did anything wrong.
I don't think he did anything wrong either. He made the best decision for him and his family, and it is what it is.
All right, I'll read you a couple of things from this. So, in one of the most difficult moments of my life and career, I stood in front of our Oklahoma team to let them know I was leaving. I saw the immediate consequence of my decision on the faces of the players. Riley said he hated the timing because the loss only hours earlier, but also cited the recent rule changes in college football impacting the recruiting cycle and said it only made a difficult transition even tougher. And he said he was filled with guilt and some guilt and sadness, realizing that Norman was no longer home. I don't have an issue with this because this comes down to like recruiting. When somebody's got five of top schools and they have to choose one, and you think it should be the best moment of their life, right? Yes. But a lot of these kids are like sad and wistful because they said no to four life-changing opportunities. It wasn't one good option versus four bad options. It was five incredible life-changing opportunities of which they had to pick one. And so you automatically enter a sliding doors reality in which there are four paths you didn't take that you can wonder what if about. So to me, it just sounds like he's talking like a recruit, but I don't think Oklahoma fans want to hear any of this. I think they just want to believe he's Darth Vader.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. JT Daniels, former USC quarterback, takes his talents to West Virginia. This was, I thought, a very interesting move. He goes to the Big 12. He was at USC, lost his job after he got injured, never really got a chance to get on the field really at Georgia. Injury was healing up slowly. And then they were winning, so they didn't take Stetson Bennett out, who's not a top-tier quarterback at all. And now he's off to West Virginia. He has to be graduated college already. What was your thought about this? Because I was hoping he was going to go to Oregon State.
I was also hoping that he was going to go to Oregon State. I think ASU tried to kick the tires on that situation as well. I want Oregon State so badly to have a capable quarterback because I want to know what Jonathan Smith's system looks like when the talent – I mean, it's the same you talked about with Kyle Whittingham, right? Like, what would he do if he had the – best available players, and they've got some decent options and returning experience, but I think JT Daniels would have been a clear upgrade over anything they had there. It shocked me because he went back to Graham Harrell, who is the offensive coordinator at West Virginia and was USC's offensive coordinator.
Yeah, but he never played for Graham, did he?
He did. He did.
Oh, for yeah.
And then he got hurt, and then Slovis took over and then was supposed to be the savior. And now he's in this weird situation where he's out at West Virginia. I'm assuming he's expecting to start. They already have Nico Markiol, who is literally the same quarterback. They're the same person. They're like almost identical playing styles, right? So they have Nico Markiol, incoming freshman, and then they decide, I'm never a fan of this, but we've had this debate a million times. I won't bore people with it again. You recruit over a recruit that you brought in, which I'm assuming, there'll be some chemistry issues there, but we'll see how that plays out. But now, one of the best rivalries in all of sports is West Virginia-Pittsburgh. And now the West Virginia-Pittsburgh rivalry is going to be quarterbacked by Keaton Slovis and JT Daniels.
Yep. That's so weird, dude. So very weird.
Very weird. And when USC went head to head with ASU when Keaton Slovis was a freshman, Jaden Daniels didn't get to play. Joey Yellen started and threw four touchdowns, and now Joey Yellen is Keaton Slovis's backup in Pittsburgh. The quarterback movement is just it's really mind-blowing. I don't know. I would have loved to have JT Daniels back out on the West Coast. I understand he made the best decision for him, but I don't know. Do you think that he views that as a strength, being able to go into an offense that he already knows?
Yes. Yeah, because that makes it like for quarterbacks, right? It takes you longer than one season to get comfortable in an offense. Like your mastery of the offense usually happens in season two. So I think that he was looking at that. He was like, I need to fast track this process. It'll be easier for me to get on the field in something that I know already.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to be measuring his performance against whatever Oregon State does this year, though, and wondering what if.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. All right. The last thing up, Arizona State's quarterback situation. Because JT Daniels left. He left him in the 11th hour. And Jaden Daniels. And then you're actually going to have a lot of kids end up in the portal before May 1st. You're going to have quarterbacks, because if you're not in by May 1st, then you aren't immediately eligible. So we're going to see a big uptick in the next, you know, week plus of kids hopping in the portal.
Yeah.
So now the question is, who's going to be their quarterback for next year?
Every source indicates that Paul Tyson, that came over from Alabama, is not ready. He's not shown that he's ready.
Okay.
So that leaves it to your boy, Finn Collins, who you know really well.
I hope he wins it.
Dalen McLemore, who has battled through some injuries, out of California, who looked decent in their spring game, and Trent Borgay, last year's backup, who I know, and I know his family really well. And I'm at this point, it's no secret, I'm openly rooting for him to get an opportunity to see what he can do, because it'd make for a really cool story.
So, and I'm rooting for Finn Collins. So who do you, but, so do you want to make a gentleman's wager on who will win?
Well, we're probably both going to be wrong, because all indications are
entirely right.
Well, first of all, Trey Anderson announced his departure today. He's been the primary quarterbacks coach through all the weird coaching transition scandal that Arizona State's had for the last couple of years. So he announced today that he's leaving, which leaves the entire offense in the hands of Brian Billick as a consultant and Glenn Thomas, the former OC of UNLV. And so Herm Edwards has kind of alluded a few times in comments to the idea that maybe next year's starting quarterback is not on the roster yet. And I want to know from you, because that hits my ear really weird. Like, because what you're saying is, we want quarterbacks to come to Arizona State because, number one, the opportunity that they'll have to play, but number two, because we'll put them in situations to excel, AKA we will develop you, right? So come to ASU because we'll develop you. We just couldn't develop any of the quarterbacks on our roster.
Mm.
So don't, but I'm saying, like, if you're a quarterback and you're looking around for a
destination, means that they either didn't recruit well or didn't develop them well.
Right. Right. And so are you, because to me, it would hit my ear weird, like, because they're after the guy who is transferring out of Florida, who started for them the last 2 years. ASU is pursuing him. And one of the things that you have to take into account is, you're saying, like, hey, nobody here is really showing us that they're going to take the job. You know, come throw your hat in the ring. We think Arizona State would be a great place for you. But you also have to receive that as a recruit and saying, wait a minute, you couldn't develop a quarterback to the point where you're still looking at quarterbacks, and you want me to believe that I'll be the first one that you'll be able to develop? It's almost, you have to almost entirely play on somebody's ego to the point where they completely dismiss the logic of the fact that you haven't developed any quarterbacks, and that Jaden Daniels regressed, and that he wanted out of town, and that your de facto quarterback coach just left the team. Like,
yeah.
I do not see what the appeal is at this point of transferring into Arizona State to play quarterback outside of just supreme confidence in that, like, I'll be different.
Listen, you cannot just be different. Like the past is the greatest predictor of future success or failures. You guys, that is the Pac-12 Apostles. It's been a minute, but we are back like cook crack, people.
Oh, make sure to like, subscribe, and share.
Peace out.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new?
Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Lombardi may have been lifted, but that doesn't mean there's no football to talk about. It's the offseason, and there's no better way to stay up to date with the latest from our league than with the Around the NFL podcast. Join me, Dan Hensis, and my buds, Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal, for news and fresh content all offseason long. From the start of free agency, where we'll break down familiar faces headed to new places, to the next generation of superstars walking across that stage at the NFL draft, we have you covered. Listen to the Around the NFL podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Heed the call.